Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Gina McAndrews. Hello, Gina.
Hello, Susan, and hello to all the listeners out there. I'm sure happy to be here. I see that our first guest is someone who used to be a regular reporter, Leanne Harder, and she's our Story County Outreach Coordinator.
Yes, Leanne used to come over from Nevada first thing on the second Wednesday of every month to give the monthly report. Paul Wearson really enjoyed helping make the county business sound lively by his reactions to her report every month. I'm sure that we'll all miss Paul, but it's good to have you with us, Gina. Leanne said her report had something to do with you.
I have a notion that has to do with the Planning and Zoning Commission, but I guess we'll find out.
So, hi, Leanne.
Do you want me to start with the news for Gina? Because, Gina, I think you serve on the county's Planning and Zoning Commission. Is that right?
I have been, yes.
Yeah, you have been, and so you know the news. Due to some recently enacted changes in state law that actually were just, when I say recent, very recent, they were signed into law by Governor Reynolds this past Monday, June 1st. June 1st. The openings we have on the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment are vacant right now. We have a new law that requires all members to reside only inside unincorporated areas of Story County. The prior requirements were that we had to have a majority of membership inside the unincorporated areas, so outside city limits. Now, all of them have to live in the unincorporated areas. And what that means for our commission members like Gina, who live inside city limits, they can no longer serve on the Planning and Zoning Commission or Board of Adjustment. It's extremely unfortunate, but my mother-in-law used to always tell me, Leanne, it is what it is, and you go with it, and you make the best out of it. So right now, we have many openings for the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment. The Planning and Zoning Commission reviews and makes recommendations on everything from rezonings, subdivisions, conditional use permits, amendments to our comprehensive plan. Those recommendations go on to the Board of Supervisors or Board of Adjustment. The Planning and Zoning Commission really is an advisory board. And then the Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial board that makes decisions on variances, conditional use permits, also acts on appeals of the zoning administrator's decision. So we have several openings on the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment. We are currently taking applications. Applicants must be eligible electors and reside outside of city limits again in rural unincorporated Story County. So anyone that's interested in serving on a board and commission can visit the county's website. It's www.storycountyiowa.gov. And I'll repeat that several times. And there's an application if you go under boards and commissions. Or check social media later today because we'll have some information there. But some of these, a couple terms are shorter in length, some are longer. Normally they're 5-year terms, but because of the nature of this change, some are individuals are having to leave midterm, so it's not necessarily a full 5-year term. So if you want to dip your toes in the water, see if it's something that is a good fit for you and you feel called to serve Story County, this is a great opportunity. So I'm going to start some other news from other county departments and offices. Story County Environmental Health wants me to note that there's a public hearing scheduled for the Maxwell Farms CAFO application. That proposal is for 4,960 hogs. They will be housed in two buildings with manure pits located below the buildings. It's located in Indian Creek Township, Section 17, that's about 2 miles northwest of Maxwell in southern Story County. Okay, we're going to do this public meeting via Zoom. It is scheduled for June 23rd at 6 p.m. We're still ironing out the meeting details. The county is just, we're implementing Zoom, trying it this week. Meeting details are not available yet, but we'll get those posted to our website, again, www.storycountyiowa.gov, as soon as we have the information. And then check out Environmental Health for information on the CAFO as well. Then from Ted Rasmussen in the Treasurer's Office, the Treasurer's Office, even though our buildings are closed to public, across everywhere for all county departments, we're open for business. The Treasurer's Office wants me to note that it's conducting all of its normal business through phone and email. You can email them at treasurer@storycountyiowa.gov, or their direct number for phoning is 515-382-7330. Some important things to note, property taxes are technically delinquent if you have not paid them. But according to the governor's proclamation, you will not be charged any late interest or fees if they are paid on or before June 25th. So keep that in mind for that coming up in a couple weeks. All vehicle registration late fees for those with registrations for the months of January, February, March, April, and May are currently waived. However, you do need to make sure you get those renewed by July 31st to, again, avoid that penalty. And property taxes and registration renewals can be done a variety of different ways. You can do it online at www.iowatreasurers.org. You can, of course, put in the mail, or there's a drop box outside the county administration building in Nevada. It says treasurer on it. There's also some for absentee ballots. One for license plates. I do encourage you, if you come to Nevada, though, just be aware that 6th Street, the main street, is closed because they're redoing that street. We encourage everyone to reach out by phone or email if you have questions on vehicle title transfers, specialty or personalized license plates, tax sale certificates or redemptions, or any other specific piece of business that you need the treasurer's office. Anyone, again, call 515-382-7330 to reach treasurer with any questions. Now, a message from Story County Conservation. They do want to share that even though all public programs through our August 15th have been canceled, the Environmental Education Unit is working hard to come up with other at-home learning resources. Check out their social media because they are doing some really fun and hilarious and amazing stuff. It includes information for self-guided nature walks, scavenger hunts, resources related to nature exploration, as well as some free activity kits. Again, watch the website and social media as the opportunities unfold and they're developed. Story County Veterans Affairs has canceled all hometown outreach programs for now, and Veterans Appreciation Day on June 19th is canceled. Brett is teleworking from the office. He does want everyone to save the date for the Supermarket Veterans Benefits. That is now tentatively scheduled for Friday, November 13th at the Plex in Ames, and that is still on the table for now. And then Brett did wanted me to share that the newsletter, Story County Veteran, has been distributed. There are 100 extra in the office so he can mail out. So if a veteran out there is not signed up on the distribution list or is and for some reason did not get one, send Brett an email at bmclain@storycountyiowa.gov, and he can mail or email them one, and or call him at 515-956-2626. Again, I want to put a shout out. If you are interested in serving on a board or commission in Story County, please, this is the right time to do so. I can tell you stories from years working in that field that it is definitely a learning experience that you take a lot away from. So if you're curious how to reach us, since our buildings are currently closed to the public, you can check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram. Our YouTube channel right now for videos of the Board of Supervisors is kind of at a stall. Once we quit meeting in person, we quit videotaping, but that may be coming back as we transition into Zoom. You can go onto our website, again, www.storycountyiowa.gov. Sign up for Notify Me so you know when all the meetings are happening. You can select the different agendas. And I, as always, like I say every time, you can contact me directly. I am working in the office. I am at 515-382-7247. And I am also available via email at lharder@storycountyiowa.gov. And Susan, I need to tell you how much I have missed you. I don't think I've been here through 6 months. I can't believe it. For those that aren't aware, I was out of the office for the first 6 weeks of the year, and then COVID-19 hit, and I was in the office but out of the office at home. So it's good to be back and share information on what's happening at Story County. And I think in July, hopefully I'll have some more information as to where we are with our public facilities.
Well, thank you for being here. Well, I'm sure there'll be some people who will be at that Maxwell meeting. I remember how huge the one was in Story County over in Nevada for the last CAFO. So
I will ask everyone to share some patience and grace with us as we go through the Zoom meeting. It might be clunky a little bit the first couple of times. It's a learning curve, but we'll get there. By no means, if someone gets accidentally muted, is it intentional? It's probably the moderator trying to fumble her way through, and I might be the moderator, so I will be fumbling my way through.
Well, you had your Zoom meeting with us, so thank you very much, Gina.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk, where we just heard from Leanne Harder telling us what we need to know about the work of our county government. We have another regular guest, Carolyn Raffensperger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network, who recorded an interview with Pat Schlarbaum before he left. The subject was justice. So bear that in mind when we hear the description of the Black Lives Matter event held in Boone on Monday night. Here is Carolyn with Pat.
Hello, Carolyn.
Hello, Pat.
It's a hot day. Hot day today.
It is a hot day, and it's a good time to sit inside and watch the wind blow and watch the leaves carry the message of the wind on their beautiful green backs. How beautiful the wind is on these leaves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and all shades of green.
All shades of green.
Yeah.
I've been so surprised at how many shades of green they are. And all of that chlorophyll, all of that life in those beautiful trees.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about the winds of and how we are in the middle of the winds of change and what has been blowing through our communities and our lives. And it seems to me that a central theme has been the twinned ideas of well-being and justice and how well-being is essentially tied to justice.
Oh.
And so one of the things that, as we watch the tragedies and the results and the uprisings that have arisen because of the murder of George Floyd, and knowing that that was only the tip of the iceberg, to use a cliche, of how many people have been killed at the hands of police. And some of the work that I've been doing in Minneapolis through the Science and Environmental Health Network has been to stand with communities of color, indigenous communities, the Black community, many different issues that have flown through Minnesota have been matters of injustice. And so many of our listeners are aware of all the work that we've done on pipelines, the Dakota Access Pipeline that flows south of Ames, just on the western edge, and then flows south of Ames, and its origins in North Dakota, and the uprising at Standing Rock that gave that was such a remarkable coming together of people to defend both the indigenous community as well as the water. And what we have seen in Minneapolis is that the racism is built in to so many of the decisions that government officials make. It is not just police brutality. It is decisions that they make to site the pipeline known as Enbridge Line 3. We had on record by the state itself in the environmental impact statement that Enbridge Line 3 carrying tar sands oil from Canada across the wild rice beds of the indigenous communities there, the Anishinaabe, that they made the decision to give that company a permit, even though it was going to have the significant impact on that indigenous community. And the work that I've been doing in Minneapolis itself has been a community known as the Phillips community that has done a study on their health and shown that we continually cite really noxious, polluting industries in the poorest communities, the Black community, the Latino community, the indigenous community. We do it over and over again. And then we're so surprised when they have a higher cardiovascular rate, higher asthma, higher, every single ailment that you can think of is higher in those communities. And what we know is that, you know, there's a standard amount of any of these problems that arise in the human population. But what we know is that things like racism and poverty make any of those worse, that it exacerbates, it magnifies those illnesses. Okay. And the community that I've been working with has been working to developing a plan for a large abandoned building. And they showed that this being able to take this over as a community center for urban farming, for housing, for a bicycle repair shop, all these things would have benefited the community and benefited their health. And the city said, no, we need it for city buses and other things, which were going to add to the cumulative impacts of the burdens, the environmental burdens that community already had. And we do this over and over again. Racism is built into so many factors, especially the environmental factors. And so when I watch the wind blow, what I hope is that it blows through our political decision-making and our ways of governing ourselves, and it blows through clean, that we eliminate the racism, that we start to make decisions that are based on well-being and health.
Yeah.
And you're threatening the very foundation of life, water, with these pipelines. You're threatening the very foundation of health and well-being when you're threatening their food. It is, those are decisions that are pathologically wrong. They are like a cancer on the body politic. They make no sense. You can judge good decisions or government decisions based on whether they promote health and well-being and the foundations of life, which are water, food, but they are also justice. We have to have justice in order for us to have any kind of well-being. And at every turn, we have undermined the well-being of our Black brothers and sisters. We have undermined the well-being of our indigenous brothers and sisters. We have undermined the well-being of our Latino brothers and sisters. We cannot keep doing that.
Thank you, Carolyn Raffensperger, Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. And what a network it is. Thank you for strengthening the network.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard a discussion of justice between Carolyn Raffensperger and Pat Scharbaum, mostly Carolyn. Justice was also the topic of the very unusual Black Lives Matter event that took place in Boone on Monday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Our engineer, Mike Murphy, was there with his recorder to act as a reporter for KHOI. I've selected a few of the interviews he's collected, but I am pleased that he's here to give us a sense of the atmosphere of the evening. Is there anything you'd like to say by way of introduction, Mike?
Well, first of all, full disclaimer, this was the first and only time I'd ever been to Boone, Iowa. So I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know much about the town to begin with. And I was thinking that if there were a couple dozen people show up, that that would have been wildly successful for an event. But I actually did attempt to count the crowd at this green space park, and I'm going with 220 people were there. So on a Monday night in Boone, Iowa, so it was, I would say, like, I think the organizers were blown away with how successful it was in terms of crowd and in terms of peace. There were some concerns early on. I guess someone had posted something on the Real Boone, Iowa Uncensored Facebook page. If any of gun-toting Boone wants to come down and scoop the loop, let's see how peaceful they are, kind of thing. And so there was a little bit of apprehension, but nothing transpired. Everything was peaceful. Everyone got along, including the police, and so it was, it was a lovely evening, actually.
Yeah, in fact, I remember from the interviews I listened to, the police were actually handing out water bottles with water,
Right. They had a table right outside the police station, almost like it reminded me of like a kid's Kool-Aid stand or something like that, where they were handing out bottles of water there.
Okay, well, let's hear from the audio that Mike collected.
Okay.
This is about George Floyd, also about every other black person on this earth right now. This is about the little ones. This is about the generation to come after us, and we need to protect this community. We need to protect every single black person that is out there right now. I learned at a very young age that people weren't gonna like me because of my skin color. So I learned that I couldn't say nothing. I had to speak up about what I believed in, about my skin color, and I couldn't let anyone talk down on me because I was different. So I want all these little kids out here right now that aren't white, that aren't 100% white, I want y'all to know that y'all are amazing,
yeah,
and that you are perfect just the way you are. Okay, racism isn't anything new, and I know y'all know that. So I want this to be the change. I want this right here. We're all together. Every color, white, black, everybody is out here right now, and that is what y'all should want to see. And I'm so happy that you guys have joined us, because this is something amazing, and I hope that we can change the world.
I counted about 220 people gathered in Boone, Iowa on a Monday night. These people across the age spectrum, predominantly white, although there are African Americans, certainly we heard some of the African American folks speaking. And it seems to be a peaceful march. We had a couple of speakers. There was someone in a very supportive community, even though this rally was held in a green space, and it's just a lot of businesses offering free drinks and place to use the restroom. Excuse me. My name is Mike Murphy. I'm with KHOI Community Radio in Ames. Would you mind letting me know why you're here?
Well, I'm an American, and we've got a lot of issues in this country, and I'm here to support the open dialogue that's needed to help resolve some of the problems we've got going on.
And do you live here in Boone?
In Boone County.
In Boone County. Well, what's your name?
John Jordan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jordan. I appreciate you elaborating on why you're here.
You're welcome. very, very appropriate gathering, and hope something good comes of it.
Yeah. I was really surprised. I thought there'd be a couple dozen people out here. I counted it like 220 people, which I thought was pretty impressive.
I agree.
No hostility that I give your name.
Linda Kimball.
And do you live here in Boone?
I live in Boone, yeah. My daughter and her wife and kids live here. And then when I retired, and I lived in Des Moines for 50 years, I retired and moved to Ames, and then I moved over here to help them.
Terrific.
Now I'm officially retired.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank
it'll look
you.
Like you're spending it well.
Yes. Well, they've got that little girl there and that little asleep boy. Those are my grandkids.
Oh.
Yeah. But my daughter, who's 40 now, I used to take her to the Take Back the Night rallies in Des Moines.
Wow.
So that's been a while back. The last one we went to was in 92.
Wow.
So I said, yeah, we've been around. That I've raised them to be independent women, and you know, that's where they have to be.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
You have a good night.
Yeah, you too. So, do you live here in Boone?
Yeah, we live in Boone, or not in town. We live just outside the
okay.
town. This is historic for Boone. I've been in Boone County for 50 years or something.
So you've never seen a gathering this large?
No. No.
In Boone, right?
In yeah. Boone, no. Yeah.
Even the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, this is great. In fact, this is a much bigger turnout than I expected. That's good. That's really encouraging.
Could I ask you guys to give your name and why you're here?
Yeah, sure. My name's Kelsey Temple, and I'm with my son and daughter, Scarlett and Santana, and we're here because Black Lives Matter, and we want to make change.
And do you live here in Boone?
We live in Ankeny, but I'm from Boone.
Oh, okay. And how about
Hi, you? I'm Becky Sundahl, and I live in Boone, and I am here because I believe that Black Lives Matter.
That's great. Thank you very much.
I was so pleased with the turnout of people in terms of quantity, but also the quality of the passion that people brought. We saw all sorts of different types of signs that show all sorts of different, you know, priorities when it comes to Black lives. And it was really cool to see all the different names of Black people who've been lost to police violence. It was great to see their names march through our town, a town like Boone, where people don't think that activism happens. And so I think it was really exciting for Boone to see that activism does happen here. And people think that, you know, one of the comments we got was, why not do this in a town that, like, actually has quote-unquote minorities? And so I think it was important to show that, especially with Aja and Megan talking, that there are non-white people who live in this town, and they have a voice that needs to be heard and uplifted. And so I hope that this is the start for a lot of Boone folks to know that this isn't just a one-time thing, that this isn't just a thing in the cities, that these are things we can do right here in Boone, and there are people right here in Boone we can listen to.
So, do you live here in Boone?
Yeah, we live in Boone, or not in town, we live just outside the
okay.
town. This is historic for Boone. I've been in Boone County for 50 years or something. So
you've never seen a gathering this large?
No.
In Boone, right?
In Boone, yeah.
Even the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, this is great.
I'm Mike. I'm with KHOI Community Radio. Mm-hmm. Sam was on our station this morning. I was wondering if I could get you to say a few words. You were one of the speakers today. Are you out of breath?
Yes.
Do you want to talk first while she catches her breath?
Well, want to say something?
Yeah. What's your name?
Mitchell.
Do you live here in Boone?
Yes. Okay. I just want to thank everybody for coming out. You know, it's a surprise to see all of these people out here for the cause, you know, and I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good thing, you know.
I didn't know what to expect. I've never been to Boone in my life, and I was expecting a couple dozen people. I counted, it's hard to count, but I'm estimating 220 people.
Yeah, you know, people say that Boone is one of the worst towns to live in, you know, as far as being a black person, you know.
Yeah.
But seeing this today, You know, it's just amazing, man.
Self-control. And what, can you catch your breath?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And what's your name again?
Megan Poole.
Megan Poole.
Yes.
And you spoke earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So you were involved early on in the planning of this?
Yes, I was.
And what motivated you?
I guess because I'm part of the younger generation, so I wanted to do this for all the younger kids, the people who come after us, mm-hmm. just to make sure that they know that there's nothing wrong with them, no matter what society tells them, that they are perfect the way they are, and that they shouldn't listen to anyone who doesn't agree with their skin color, because eventually this is going to be everyone that's out here. It's us against racism, and I'm happy that it was this many people out here to support us, because this is what changes the world.
Right.
My name is Aja, that's A'JA. Last name Lyons, LYONS.
Okay. And as you said in your little talk, you live here.
I do live here. I am not an outsider. I live here.
And what did you think about the turnout?
I was floored. When I showed up, I started crying because I was not expecting this big of a turnout. I was expecting 20 to 40 people. Maybe 50 max.
That's what I was thinking, too.
And I know there was more than 50.
Yeah.
I know there was more than 50.
There were more than 200, easily.
Yes, and I couldn't believe it. And people showed up, and as I said, they didn't just show up for me. They didn't just show up for the Black community in Boone or even in Iowa. What they're really doing is showing up for themselves and for morality.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as people realize that is a lot of what it's about, I mean, it literally is about Black lives. Don't get me wrong. That's priority number one. But number two is your own sense of morality.
Right. Just basically doing the right thing.
It is the right thing. And acknowledging that it's the right thing and putting in the work towards the right thing.
That's
and it's
great.
Just hands and feet on the groundwork. It's not some little sticker or blackout on Facebook. It's like, no.
Right.
It's showing the world exactly who you are, what you value, what is important, and what you will fight for.
Is there anything else you want to let the KHOI listeners know?
Today we showed that Boone is not some bigoted little railroad town where people can sort of get away with nothing. That's my babies. Those are our friends. Those are our neighbors. Those are our loved ones. And they're making us so proud.
There's
and
a bunch of young folks.
George Floyd! Breonna Taylor!
Look at the baby.
Breonna Taylor!
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. You've been listening to a compilation of voices from participants in the Black Lives Matter March held in Boone last Monday. That railroad whistle is a great introduction to our next guest, Mike Wendell, director of the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum, just about a mile down the road from the main street where the march was. It has been closed along with the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway since the early spring, but officially has opened, and the director of the museum is here to tell us about it. Let's welcome him with a little music from the jingle for the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
Come and ride the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. Turn back them old hands of time. See the beautiful Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad line.
It's time to introduce our next guest,
Mike Wendell, director of the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum.
I've been wondering what's been happening to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, and I guess that is what you're going to be telling us about, right?
That's right. Okay. Well, glad to be here. Now, we had been closed for the last several months. We ended up closing on about March 10th, and we opened Friday of Memorial Day weekend with our rides as well as having the museum. It closed. We are a part of what's called the Heritage Rail Alliance, which is a group of excursion railroads just like ours, that everything from the Mount Rainier Scenic Railroad to many others, the Georgetown Silver Plume in Colorado and many others. And when this all happened, the COVID started, all of them were wondering what in the world are they all going to do about it. When you're in a business, just like with airlines, when you deal with people, how do you deal with that? So after many Zoom meetings, our general manager had with a lot of folks on the Heritage Alliance board, they adopted basically the CDC guidelines that everybody else has been adopting, which includes hand washings for at least 20 seconds. Soap and water is basically readily available in and around the depot now. We've had hand sanitizers installed in all our restrooms and public areas in the depot. We're constantly cleaning frequently touched surfaces like tables, doorknobs, light switches, countertops. Every time a train goes out and it comes back, we have a number of people that clean every surface, horizontal, vertical surface that they can when it comes in. Of course, the employees here wear masks, and we encourage our public to wear masks as well when they come. And then in terms of what we've been doing with our dinner train and train cars, our dinner train has been around for many, many years. We opened, by the way, in 1983, and our dinner train has been really popular. What we did with that was we removed 2/3 of the tables that are in the cars. Our goal, of course, is to have some social distancing, which we have done. The cars would hold a lot more. Now the dinner train cars just hold 30. And so it's kind of interesting to see the tables are kind of, there's plenty of room around the tables now. And again, we ask the visitors that attend for dinner train or any train to wear masks. Our regular excursion train that we've had for many years, we removed 2/3 of the capacity. So we went from 300 in a train down to 100. So now visitors have a lot of room. And there's, you know, the groups that come together, you know, they can sit together because they came together. But we also maintain and suggest that all visitors remain at least 6 foot or 2 arms lengths away, otherwise known as, we have some posters in our lobby that says, "One hiding hobo's distance from other visitors." So we're clever ways to get people to think about how far they should maintain their social distance. And so our regular excursion ride is 1 hour, 45 minutes long. The folks that we have had come have been thrilled and surprised that we're open and grateful that we're open, because a lot of them would like to just get out of the house. They realize that COVID's not going to go away. And there's a lot of folks that are looking for something different to do. And what a great way to get out and to go into the Des Moines River Valley and enjoy the fresh air where there's an open air car and so on. And so so folks are really excited about that. But basically, if you make a reservation, that would be the, if you're going to be on a train, you want to make a reservation, call ahead, our 800 number, 800-626-0319. And our website's www.bsvrr.com, and all the information's on there. Basically, we require limited seating, and we like to know how many people are coming. We've never had to do that before, but the good thing about doing this is we know how many folks will be in each train car, so nobody's going to be bumping elbows at all. That just is not the case anymore. So in terms of the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center, we just finished with the new exhibit. It took about a year and a half to put together, almost 2 years, and includes 19 four-color display banners that are 7 foot tall, each of them. Those that were interactive, these are all four-color banners, by the way. Those monitors that we set up every time we have a new exhibit have been converted from interactive to self-running displays. And so folks don't have to touch anything in terms of that. They self-run. There's videos that run, and we've got static displays too in our display cases. We've got a lot of rare three-dimensional trolley artifacts. And another way that we've been able to display things is we've got some small monitors inside of our display cases. Like, we've got an incredibly rare ticket display, and one of the ways to do that is to have it on a small monitor that just runs, which is great. We also have been working on now for quite some time, and it's getting there, and involved painting a caboose here that was an old Chicago Northwestern caboose and restoring it. That's called Life in a Caboose. It's an exhibit. We're still working on it, and we hope to be pouring concrete for a double wide sidewalk that'll be like a platform where it will be self-touring, and inside are the same types of graphic panels. that folks can learn about how cabooses were part of the trains that were throughout Ames and Boone and everywhere else in Iowa and the country. Now, our museum library is closed because it's a touching situation in terms of, you know, people would be handling books and such. And our gift shop remains closed at the moment, but you can order gift shops online. And that's, again, at our www.bsvr.com. And there's free shipping on orders that are $35 and up. But basically, we've got volunteers are still running in terms of our equipment. They're working on track, special projects like painting things that we do every year around here. And so our fall trains are still set up. Everything is set up for the Dowell Thomas event, which is September 19th and 20th and the 25th and 27th. Pumpkin Express trains that we have every year, October 3rd, 10th, and 17th, which are all Saturdays. They're all slated to happen, as well as our Santa Express, November 27th to 29th and December 4th, 5th, 6th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 18th, 19th, and 20th of December. So basically our dinner train, as I said, we have limited seating and reservations are required. They've always been required anyway on the dinner train, and that runs Saturday at 5. We have a lunch train. That's Saturday at 10:45. Reservations are required for that. And then we're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday here. So Friday, we've got a 1:30 train, regular excursion train, the 1-hour, 45-minute train into the valley. Saturday at 1:30 and 4, we have two trains, and then Sunday at 1:30. And so those are the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's when we're open. And then basically that's what that is. And we've got some beautiful banners for our exhibit called Electric Railroads of Iowa. And it's been a thrill putting it together. There's information on Ames, the streetcars and the dinky, and all sorts of information, detailed information and photos that maybe some folks have not seen. We've come across in the last several years some extremely rare photography, and I'm grateful for those that have allowed us the rights to reproduce this photography. And so it's we're looking forward to a good year. Yes, things have changed, but at the same time, we're still here, and we are open to the public, and we're looking forward to seeing folks. And I know that after speaking with folks, they're just grateful to get out of the house because COVID's not going to be disappearing anytime soon. But yet they still want to, you know, run their lives and do the things that they'd like to do.
Well, thank you. And I'd like to make a couple of personal comments about my trips to the the James H. Andrew Museum, which we visited just after it opened. And Paul Wearson and I had a wonderful conversation with James H. Andrew, whose family came out to Iowa on a boxcar, not a covered wagon, a boxcar. And I had also learned that, is it true, Mike, that Iowa had more feet of track than any other state?
Yeah, it was overbuilt in terms of railroads. There was a lot of speculation in those early days. There were East Coast bankers that were eager to loan a lot of big money, including for the Fort Dodge Line. We're on the last remnants of what the Fort Dodge Line, the largest electric interurban railroad in all of Iowa. We're on the last 11 miles of that exists, which includes two bridges on that. And so they, in those days, about 1905 is when they met with the East Coast bankers to begin the Fort Dodge Line. They borrowed $2 million just for the electric power plant that was down at Fraser, and then almost another $2 million to build the track. So you could have taken it from Webster City down to Des Moines. You could have taken it from Rockwell City in the Northwest all the way down to Newton. And so Iowa was not only overbuilt in railroads, but it was overbuilt in many ways for electric railroads. And that's what this exhibit's all about. It's I had no idea there was so much photography and information on it, that it actually, we had to have 19 banners. Usually we have 15, but we've got 19 for this now. So, and I'm still adding more to this as we go. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And when I learned about the electric railways, I thought, oh, I wish we still had them.
Yeah, if we did, you know, the DART, actually here in Boone, my wife used to take the DART down to, and she worked at Mercy. And basically, if the line from Boone down to Des Moines still existed, folks could have taken that and just gone and taken that every day, you know, which would have been great. And, you know, they were doing 55 miles an hour, sometimes 60 on those, and it would have been a terrific way to go. Plus, there's no, it's electric, so it's clean, you know, so there were great advantages back then.
When was that taken out?
Actually, the last running, the very last time a trolley ran was August 31st of 1955 for the Fort Dodge line. The yards were here and still ran until the 1970s, but they just did freight. They switched over to diesel. And a lot of those tracks were taken out that went south into Des Moines just a little after the Depression. Although, like I say, there were still a lot of the lines still. In the 1950s, I was a little too young, but if I would have come here, I probably would have been a baby and seen what was here in the yards, and it was just filled with electric equipment. So I'd say the majority of the larger part of the line was after the Depression, and some of that still stayed, the tracks. It depends what part of it you're talking about, actually. There's parts that came and were ripped up. 50s and 60s, even, there was a lot of track ripped up. So
they just weren't using it or saw no future in it?
Yeah, the shipping was still a really attractive way to go, because the Fort Dodge line, there wasn't much money, if any, I shouldn't say if any, because back in the early days, 1912, 14, 16, 18 to 20s, were incredible for passenger service. They actually were doing in the millions gross income in terms of passenger service. Yet freight started getting more and more and more. Gypsum mines up in Fort Dodge and so on were really a valuable thing to have. And so freight paid the bills. That's actually what it says in one of our banners here. That's what I call the headline, freight pays the bills. And so it was much more attractive to do that than deal with passengers. But the main thing that really spelled the end of it was the automobile, of course. You know, when people started, you know, the 57 Chevys, the Buick Roadsters and things like that, that's when people wanted to have the urge to drive, and when the highways got better and better. And of course, when Eisenhower laid out these incredible highways and things, that really spelled the end of it.
But the legacy is the bike paths, right?
That's right. I'm a great proponent. I ride about 4,000 miles a year, and a lot of it I'm back and forth on the old Milwaukee line across that bridge, over the valley down there and stuff. And I love it. And if anybody has ever seen how many people can be on that bike path, you're out in the open area, but at different times over the years, I've been here since 2012, and that's one of my favorite places to go. It's a very popular place.
Come and ride the Boolean Scenic Valley Railroad. Turn back them old hands of time. See the beautiful Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Senee Valley Railroad line. I love to hear that old train whistle blowing. I love to see the steam fill up the sky. I love to feel the wheels below me roll. The Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad line. When you ride the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad, your journey through the past will ease your mind. Cross the high bridge in the Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad line. I love to hear that old train whistle blowing. I love to see the steam fill up the sky. I love to feel the wheels below me rolling on the Boone and Senee Valley Railroad line. All aboard the Boone and Senee Valley Railroad. Through the hills and valleys you will climb. Exciting thrills and fun for those that's riding on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad line.
folks, come and experience one of Iowa's great attractions. Cross the highest single-track interurban bridge in the United States as you ride in vintage 1920s passenger cars or turn-of-the-century caboose. View spectacular scenery on this very impressive 14-mile round trip. So all aboard from May through October, 11th and Division Streets, Boone, Iowa.
See the beautiful Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad Line.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Branson and Gina McAndrews. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Carolyn Raffensperger, participants in the Boone Black Lives Matter March with Michael Murray and Mike Wendell.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, the Ames Public Library will present a special program to brighten your day in the time of COVID-19.
You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was also from The Ballad of Kate Shelley. It was the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website at khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member. Or you can renew your membership at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. Thank you. anyone who is interested, there will be a march this evening, May 10th at 7 p.m. from Ryman Garden to Brookside Park. The poster says it's aims against police brutality.